3 months ago, I had a rough time, very rough time. As is often the case, however, there were learning opportunities. In a time of darkness and with tears in my eyes, I heard a needed but unexpected question. How does it feel to be surrounded by so much love? The question was from our veterinarian. On the morning we made the hard but necessary decision to send our sweet dog, Copper, to the green yards and endless tennis balls in the sky. In our time together this morning, I want to link our vet, our dog, two learning experiences that I've had recently teaching my water law class, and a different look at the new life side of Easter. I know that sounds like a lot, but as Jesus said to the women at the tomb, you needn't be afraid. Most every time I have the privilege of speaking from a pulpit or leading a group, I recall one of two experiences. First, the time Roxanne's father, my father-in-law, showed me a stopwatch and demonstrated how to work it before I went to church to preach. And secondly, the time my good friend Jim, Chad's father, audibly started his running watch timer before a small group meeting I was leading. It's good to have family and friends restore perspective. Our veterinarian is one of the most profoundly Christian persons I have ever known. I have no idea whatsoever if she's ever recited a creed, made a confession, or even darkened the door of a church or another house of worship. I have, however, experienced how she genuinely loves and cares for others. That is authentically Christian. The others this kind woman embraces include all kinds of people, as well as the most trusting, humble, and vulnerable of God's creatures, dogs and other adored pets. Our vet was always good to us and good to our sweet dog. She loved him and she loved us. How many doctors kiss their patients every time they see them and then want to be repeatedly kissed back? Dr. Eskew? It's probably a bad strategy unless perhaps you're a veterinarian. But even then, my guess is that most vets don't kiss all their patients unless perhaps they're treating their own cat or dog. For us, on a Wednesday morning, after our dog had been coughing and having an occasional short breath, we took him in. We thought he was having allergy trouble. That was our vet's prediction as well, but as a precaution, she took an X-ray. After a few minutes, she came back into the room, tears rolling down her face, and she gave us the terrible news that our dog had a very advanced form of cancer. She told us what she'd do if it was her dog. She'd let him pass and help him pass. There was nothing that could be done. Nothing that could be done to effectuate a cure. And trying to do something would impact seriously the quality of his life. under those circumstances. It was an easy decision, but it was quite a shock when less than 3 full days later the time was upon us. We promised ourselves and our dog that we wouldn't allow him to hurt or struggle to breathe. That morning, after saying our goodbyes, he was in my lap on his favorite towel. Dr. M gave Copper the merciful injection, and I know many of you have been through this before. He peacefully then passed from us, and his suffering ended. And as she gave him the injection, she asked that question: how does it feel to be surrounded by so much love? I assumed that her question was addressed to Copper. But in order to affirm Roxanne and me for the home we'd provided him, the love we'd given him, and the decision we'd made to put an end to his suffering. Yet on further reflection, there was another dimension to that question, addressed directly to us. How did it feel for us to be surrounded by that much love? Every day, every moment, unconditionally. Well, I can tell you, it felt wonderful, wonderful. God teaches us in many and diverse ways when we're open to it. Our dog enjoyed the gift of life right now, not tomorrow, but right now. He was always glad to see us. He quickly and completely forgave wrongs. He also was open and loving, I'd like to say to everyone, but let's say to most everyone. Because when he sensed someone, when he sensed we were uncomfortable with someone, might not be so friendly, but then he'd warm up. But generally, he was open and friendly to everyone. Can you imagine what the world would be like if people treated each other that way? Now, what possible transition now for me to mention what I've learned in my water law class about things much more important than substantive water law? Well, you know, that's easy. It's real easy. For the first time in 26 years of teaching at Baylor Law School, I have a dog in my class. And he sits or sleeps under the table on the first row. Yes, I know, most dogs like water. But this one has a higher calling. He is the attentive guide to a second-year law student in my class. And my friends, this student is amazing. She's always well prepared. She participates meaningfully in class, as much or more than anyone else. When we have a guest speaker, she arrives early, she dresses up, she smiles, she thanks them for coming and makes a point to say thank you again before they leave. Anytime she asks for help, she always says thank you on the front end and on the back end. Law school involves a lot of time. There's a lot of reading for every class, and it needs to be done slowly and carefully. Her preparation time must be at least twice that of the average law student. And I thought, for all these years, I thought it was hard to go to law school at age 30 after having a family and a mortgage and a part-time job, which I wasn't supposed to have because I was a full-time student. Little did I know. One day this quarter, I had way too much to do. I was overwhelmed. Drive up at a ridiculously early hour from Austin to Waco. Teach a morning class. Rush up to my office and get on a conference call. Go to a lunch meeting. Prepare for an afternoon class. Teach the afternoon class. And then go to a law practice related meeting. What we call that? What do we call that? Bad planning. Bad planning. During my morning class, I was completely preoccupied with the rest of my day, starting with what's next, the conference call. Got through class, rushed out. And as I hurried to get on the call, I realized we were behind for the quarter on my carefully thought out syllabus. The class by class plan was the product of my spending the entirety of last summer getting ready to teach this new course. What was I going to do? How could we catch up and cover all of the subjects and the cases per my plan? I felt beyond stressed. Once again in my life, I was overwhelmed by and servant to an aggressive to-do list, always seeing everything left to do, compulsively checking off the items, getting them done, and feeling pressed to get to the end of the list as if there's an end to these lists, because one list begets the next. In the midst of that frenzy, I heard the voice of a law professor, mentor, and friend saying, "How you cover the material is more important than how much you cover." In a nutshell, he advised, "Be where you are." Wow. Slow down. Focus on one thing at a time. Give yourself to the moment. That day, I recall looking down the hall, seeing my student leave the classroom with her dog, Angus. What a great name for a dog. Angus the dog. They made careful steps, one at a time. They truly live with stellar quality. I also thought of a woman in our neighborhood that Roxanne and I see quite often with a seeing eye dog, a greyhound. This boy is a gentle giant. She takes care of him. He takes care of her. She faithfully walks him every day on the sidewalk, around the block a few times. This is most unlike others that we see, me included in the past, who hurriedly walk their beasts. They tug, they rush, taking them beyond the interesting smells that they've been waiting all day to stop and sense. Why? Got to walk the dog, got to check it off the list and get to the next thing. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Got to get it done. In contrast, our neighbor, she was there. She was careful. She was deliberate. She was attentive. Amazing, isn't it? Jesus healed the blind. Now he uses the blind to help the rest of us truly see that we all need to live qualitatively, embracing and enjoying a focused life. That brings us now to a link to Easter. And it's never out of season to talk about Easter, is it? Easter is truly the beginning of the new age. One meaningful way to understand Easter is that Jesus came again that first Easter. We've already been delivered. There's no more waiting. We live in God's kingdom, if we choose to, right now. So how should we live? We can and should make the choice to live responsively to God's love. On Easter morning, God's first words to the brave women who came to the empty tomb through angels and Jesus himself, those first words were, "Do not be afraid." In his book, Conquering Fear, Rabbi Harold Kushner tells us that those comforting words, "Do not be afraid," occur more than 80 times in the Bible. This is a post-Easter principle for all of us, to live and serve with our eyes peacefully open and without fear. In the wisdom of Proverbs 4, we should walk step by step without stumbling, with our eyes focused and straight forward along a daily narrow path of life and discipleship. Often we're guilt-ridden by the past or preoccupied with the future, maybe both. Perhaps we're afraid of truly slowing down peacefully and intentionally in the moment. Instead of looking too far ahead or looking behind me, I know I need to open my eyes to the present and to the people around me. If we do so and surround one another with love, we will truly be in God's kingdom. As Thomas Merton says in an essay on Christian humanism, "The New Testament provides a strong theological basis for a practical life of love among men and women. God is manifest in actual love, not in pious ideas or practices." In a post-resurrection appearance, the one we read about in John 20, Jesus says twice to his friends, "Peace be with you." He then breathes the life of the Spirit into them. This is akin to the breath of the goodness of life that God breathed into women and men at the beginning, as recorded in the first chapter of the book of Genesis. God created mankind in his image. God later came as a man himself. in our form, he accepted and actively loved all kinds of men and women around him. Now God calls us to live creatively by redemptive love. God help us to live and to see clearly day to day without hesitation. Amen.